Right. Welcome to the Jefferson County Public Hospital District Number 2 Board of Commissioners meeting on Wednesday, August 24th, 2022. This virtual meeting is being held under Governor Inslee's COVID-19 Notice of Proclamation 2028 and will offer a live public comment period during the business section of our meeting. You may join us live on Microsoft Teams through our website at www.jeffersonhealthcare.org. Select About Us, Hospital Commission, and scroll down to the links. You may also join audio only at 509-598-2842 and enter ID number 383-682-973#. This session is being officially audio recorded and times shown on the agenda are estimate only. We have four commissioners present at this time, and we're waiting for the fifth to arrive. I will announce when he does. First order.
Commissioner Buehler, can I make one statement really quick? The conference ID number has changed.
Oh, good.
And it's updated on the website to this number, just for the record, 702-065-698#.
Thank you very much for that information. All right. With that correction, I wanted to thank you, Alyssa, for being with us for all these years, and this is your last meeting, I know, as you're moving on to another job, and we're happy for you, but sad for us that you're leaving, and thank you for what you've done for us and with us, and how you've helped us throughout the time you've been here.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Alyssa.
Yes.
Thank you.
There is a change to the agenda, as we will not be holding an executive session tonight. So we can scratch that. And so with that, is there a move to approve the amended agenda?
So moved.
Okay, Mari first and Bruce second. Discussion? All in favor, raise your hand.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. The agenda is approved. So still no case. Go ahead and begin the discussion of governance. Last month, we talked about possible topics for our generative governance workshop on September 14th. So in considering those topics that we were to bring today and discuss, I'm wondering if you've considered the idea of generative governance as a whole and how it's working for us, along with the topics that we might be considering for the workshop. So can I hear your opinions? Is anyone willing to share their opinion of how it's working and what you think about it and how we can make it better, or should we look at maybe not having it? Do you have any opinions?
Well, if I may speak, Commissioner Buehler, I'm wondering whether at this time, this juncture in with what is going on with the hospital district, all the changes and the looking forward and the building, the services that we're trying to upgrade, improve and expand and bring in new services, all those sorts of things. I wonder if our time might be better spent supporting administration in that and not be so concerned about being a generative board, because it seems like there's more that we could do to support the administration at this time. That's what comes to mind, because it's very hard as a public district to really embrace the generative view. I think we are already, without specifying, without actually calling it generative, I think we're already doing it, looking at childcare, looking at other aspects of supporting our community members and supporting our staff, and looking outside the box. We're already doing that without such a formal setup, if you like. So those are my immediate thoughts as you pose the question.
Anyone else have any thoughts, opinions?
You know, I pretty much agree with what Mari says. I think for me, the main thing is to make sure that I, or we as a board, continue to ask, so what things should we be asking questions about and discussing? And if one of us feels like we're not doing that, then we could call, we could say, well, I think we need to have a, get back and have another generative governance meeting to talk about, you know, why we haven't been doing that or what we need to do differently, rather than scheduling one every quarter, just because that's what we decided to do. I don't know. I think I agree with Mari. I think in a lot of ways, that's what we're doing already. We've just incorporated it into our normal things. And we're not just talking about, you know, finances and the regular operations. We talk about, so what else do we need to be thinking about here, whether it's, you know, childcare or, you know, wellness programs or, you know, those sorts of things that we maybe aren't doing as much of.
Do you have an opinion?
Well, I mean, I think generating ideas is definitely a good exercise in the appropriate situation with the appropriate topic. I think maybe we weren't quite doing it right. Maybe we're doing it too often. And maybe part of it is we might be kind of missing the kind of generative idea learning that we were getting from the hospital conferences that were used to happen on a regular basis before COVID. And so we're sort of feeling the vacuum of that, I think. I like generative discussion exercises. Maybe we were doing, had them scheduled too often. Maybe it should be like once a year, not four times a year. It's just, it's because it's not appropriate for us to talk. It's I think maybe the frequency, we had that wrong. So we had some things wrong, but we can figure that out.
Okay. I agree with everything all of you said. I think it feels forced to me. And I don't think that's the way it should be. I agree with you, Matt, that maybe we're just, you know, putting it on such a prescriptive schedule has made it more difficult, because it seems like we're trying to come up with ideas when actually it should be the other way around, that ideas should come up after there's something there, and then we look at it and say, well, here's how we can help.
Yeah, I agree with what Matt just said, because I think there's a lot of stimulation and idea. Ideas coming from when we go to particularly workshops and conferences, where we talk with people, commissioners from other hospital districts, and learn from the presenters at these meetings, who used to come from all over the country. So it would stimulate more idea producing thought. That's how I find it, and I think probably that's what Matt was aiming at too. So I agree with him, and maybe once a year would be the ideal.
Okay, well, Case, you haven't heard from Case yet, Alyssa?
I haven't, no.
Okay. Is anyone willing to make a motion to perhaps either use the 14th to discuss how we can, when we should have a meeting, if we're going to have at what frequency, or we could put our ideas out and then discuss them at the next board meeting in education section that we're using right now, and not have a full workshop meeting on the 14th and just discuss frequency and that in September.
Yeah, I think it, well, I shouldn't go first. I went first last time. So I'll let Bruce or Matt go first, if I may.
Well, I'd kind of like to have Case involved with the discussion on it, because he's, you know, one of the main drivers behind,
yes,
you know, moving ahead with the governance.
So maybe we could,
I would
do
say
board
maybe
business.
Next meeting. The next meeting we do board business and talk about it. It's probably just going to be a frequency thing that we talk about, and maybe set a date for when we would have another one. Or yeah.
What we could do, let's see if under board business this meeting we can make that decision and give Case a chance to come online. And see when we could, but we do need to make a decision as to whether or not to continue with the September 14th meeting. So would anybody give an opinion here? I suggest we cancel the 14th. We've got plenty going on. Lots of other things that we're doing, and I know staff is having a hard time keeping up with everything. So I recommend we.
I'll make a motion that we cancel the meeting that we'd scheduled for the 14th, and we make a decision about when the next meeting will be, either later in this meeting under board business or at the next regular commission meeting.
I'll second that.
All right. It's been moved and seconded that we cancel our September 14th meeting and discuss when we might have another meeting at board business this meeting. Is that correct?
We haven't had a vote yet, Commissioner Buehler. We haven't had our vote yet.
No, that's the motion in the second.
Okay.
So is there any further discussion? All in favor, raise your hand. Okay. So then we will go ahead and cancel the September 14th and talk about this in your board business today, about rescheduling something for in the future. Okay, then we will move on to our education topic. So we will hear two reports today during our education session. First, we're going to hear from Jackie Levin, our patient advocate. And the second is an update on Huron by Chief Patient Safety and Quality Officer Brandy Manuel. So Jackie Levin, welcome. And
thank you
for being with us today.
Thank you for having me. So this is a report from the second quarter, and we can have the next slide. So this is just a reminder that as the patient advocates, our goals are to restore the trust in Jefferson Healthcare if that's been lost through some patient concerns that a person has, and also just to help people navigate through the healthcare system. And we're operating under goal 5 of our strategic plan, improving the patient experience. Next slide. So these are the kind of the pillars that we use in order to navigate through patient concerns, patient questions, patient suggestions. And we do this with our patients and families, and we do this with our colleagues that we're working with as well. Next slide. So our service feedback in quarter 2, you can see the data. It hasn't changed too dramatically in terms of numbers. We've just had a few less contacts and a few less items reported from our patients and families. We've had our average days to acknowledgement 2.2 days, days to closure 11.3, and foreclosures went beyond our goal of 30 days. And our top opportunities identified are communication and COVID-19 protocol concerns have come in, and access and transitions of care. One of the things that we quarter got a phone call from a patient who found it challenging to get the antiviral medication. They did get it that weekend, but they felt like they were going through several different channels and hoops. And in working with Jamie and Dan and others in terms of what our current process is and potentially how the process can be improved. They made a decision to refer patients on weekends to the Washington Department of Health COVID antiviral telehealth line. And this is giving patients quicker access to antivirals and is also freeing up our primary care providers and our Express Care Clinic providers who were part of this process for weekends. So it's very interesting to go into the details and to be able to, even though it was one patient call, this was a decision that hadn't yet been reviewed by the team. And this gave them the opportunity to review it and make a decision that would benefit everyone. Next slide. Unless there's questions, happy to pause. All right. Thanks, Alyssa. Next slide. All right. Here we are with our navigation feedback and service recovery. We wanted to begin data collection on what are not actual patient concerns going through the traditional concern process, but tracking those that we're helping with a billing question. We've got folks calling to look for transgender care providers, people who feel referrals may have gotten held up, survey questions, again, appointment and scheduling. And we get a fair amount of calls from Jefferson University in Pennsylvania. especially, it doesn't matter. It could be, and we have their patient service and advocacy phone number, email, which we share. But also, our transgender navigator, which is me, care navigator, comes up for Jefferson University, and their staff are referred to us frequently. And actually, it feels quite good. I recently got a call from a nurse practitioner working with an inpatient, and she wasn't sure where to refer them next. And so together we found a doctor at Temple for them to go see. So we're doing some bi-coastal work as well. Next slide. I thought today that I would just bring our Patient Family Advisory Council to the front. This is an incredibly dedicated group of people, both from our community and from our teams, our staff. I so love working with this group, and I find our staff are so engaged and are really thinking things through from the patient perspective. there's not a sense of, oh my gosh, you know, we have to protect certain things or hide certain things. They're just right there with thinking things through, as well as the expertises they have in their areas. It's phenomenal. So they're a wonderful resource. We too will miss Alyssa. We want to thank her for her service to us. And but here's the team of staff and community members. And recently we've this year we had Chris Harris give us his Black History Month presentation, which was wonderful. We had Aaron come and tell us about the expansion project, and the team, the PFEC team, made the suggestion that it become the Improved Safety Enhanced Services Project, because it really just wasn't about expansion, but it's really about some serious safety issues. And they felt like our community should know that. They had concerns about cancellations for appointments coming through our texting service now. They would like to speak with somebody. And this has been put through as an SBAR. We had a patient concern come through that test results were given through MyChart before they had a chance to speak with their provider. And in that particular case, there were some things that we learned and could improve upon. But I brought the Cures Act and this question of releasing test results to the PFAC Council, and they overwhelmingly were like, nope, we want our test results. And when I have questions, I'll call my provider. So it was good to be able to just see, yep, there's something that we can improve on this part. And also it is truly what at least this team of people say is important to them. As we were in the renaming process of the women's clinic to the OBGYN clinic, they also were overwhelmingly in favor of naming the service and not the who enters those doors. So they are just a wonderful team to be able to go to with different questions and processes and that we're going through here as an organization. Next slide. And also, I chair the LGBTQIA task force. And on the right are the photos of the organizations that are part of our task force. Of course, we in the background is our HEI award team, but in the foreground is our transgender support on the peninsula. We've got Dove House represented and Olympic Pride, along with other community members who are interested. And as far as who represents us, this is the areas of that people are participating. And they're also just an incredible committed team. Some of the things that we've been working on is we're working on gender affirming demographic intake forms, as well as we worked very closely with our Family Birth Center on how to make all of their materials gender affirming, that we're not just referring to mothers, we're referring to parents. So along those lines, all throughout all their materials. Next slide. And here we are in some of the activities that we have joined with our community. Our community asked us to rename our single stall bathrooms as all gender restrooms. And again, it's sort of the name of what's inside the restroom versus the who that goes in those restrooms. This is something that makes people who are transgender or gender nonconforming feel welcome and seen and safe. And here we are with Jill Bueller joining us for a few moments at our booth at Olympic, at our Pride in the Park this summer. And might not be able to pick it out, but on our wall with all the photos of our incredible staff, you can see there is a picture with a rainbow flag, bottom right of that slide. That's me. And So I'm a member of the LGBTQIA community, and it felt really good to just have that be on our wall. And recently there was an event, as many of you probably know, at our community center. Many of our transgender and transgender allies were there to show support. And I did go down with my badge to represent Jefferson Healthcare, just as a support for our transgender community. Next slide. So something that we're working on this year in terms of this is our personal pronouns, mine are she and her, and how to get those into Epic and use them once they are identified in Epic. We have done an internal audit. We're still working on the evaluation and plan. What we found is that people are really passionate and want to get this right, and not everyone has found their way through the Epic system in order to know where that demographic portion is. So we're working on some education, and we'll share some of those updates with you in future reports. I think that's the last slide. Let's see. Yes, any questions, comments?
I was glad to see our booth at the fair, or at the event there. That was really good.
Yeah.
I looked for it, and I'm like, yes, there we are.
Yes, it was a lot of fun. I asked for more LGBTQ bling this year for the booth. So we and Tina and Amy were great and helping make sure that we were celebrating. And it was a very beautiful day. Oh, my God, it was a gorgeous day. And just so many people turned out. It was definitely something that was welcomed after the recent SCOTUS report came out and decision came out. And so people were really celebrating that we could be together. Anything else?
Any other questions? Well, thank you, Jackie.
Thank you.
Thank you for your work. Okay. I have a clarification to make. I misspoke about the staff having trouble keeping up with all that's happening. What I meant to say was that our staff is doing an awesome job of keeping up with the extraordinary volume of work that we have with COVID and staff shortages here and at discharge facilities and our replacement expansion project and all the other things that are happening along with the day-to-day functioning things that are going on. And I just didn't want to add to the workload if it wasn't absolutely necessary. So congratulations to the staff, and I certainly didn't mean that you're having any trouble, because you're not. You're doing an awesome job. So I apologize and thank you. So next, any comments? Okay. Next, we will hear from our Chief Patient Safety and Quality Officer, Brandy Manuel, about HURON, H-U-R-O-N. Brandy, welcome.
Hi, thank you for having me. And I get the pleasure of talking through this, but there's a whole team that's really been dedicated to this work, and all of our leaders have been super engaged. So I would welcome any of those who've been on the planning team to also share your thoughts as we kind of go along. So most of us probably know the last couple of years have been a little shaky, a little rough. Not a lot of us really planned on working through a pandemic in our professional careers, and yet that's where we found ourselves. And so much of the focus that we had on everyday just excellence and great outcomes and doing things really well still stayed there, but we were a little distracted by trying to navigate the murky waters of a pandemic. And so about a year ago, 18 months ago, we started talking about, okay, the pandemic is still here. It's probably going, you know, COVID is not going to go away. And we also need to refocus on all of the things that we were focused on before. So how do we give great care? How do we provide the best service? And how do we be the best place to work? And so started looking at some different frameworks and different processes for sort of how to get back to that place. And in a meeting at some point, Mike mentioned getting our mojo back. And that kind of stuck. So we have sort of named this leadership work Team Mojo, just kind of fun, but also truly to help get our mojo back and help us sort of refocus on excellence across the board. So we started by asking for feedback from our leaders, and we got it, which was great. We heard that we measure too much and it was inconsistent. We heard that staffing was an issue in some areas. We heard that our values and communication didn't always feel aligned or feel consistent. And they also shared that they didn't feel like we were working as efficiently or effectively as we could. So we drilled down a little further, and this comes from an organizational readiness assessment that we did with Huron at the beginning of this work. And we said, well, what is it that we're doing well? And you can see here kind of the responses broken out by group. So on the far left, you have the responses that came from our strategic leadership group, and then our directors, managers, supervisors, and providers. And again, these are self-identified. So if somebody switched from a supervisor to a director during this time, it may look a little wonky, but the data is still good. And you can see the colors are representing sort of categories. So the white boxes represent kind of a one-off, and then the others are kind of aligned. So the areas where folks generally felt like we were doing well were patient safety and quality, which is great. And also community outreach showed up a couple of times. And then we had a couple of people identify employee compensation and benefits, technology, financial performance, and a focus on our mission, vision, and values. So then we asked the next natural question, which was, okay, well, what can we do better? And again, kind of same methodology, the colors are representing sort of themes. And so what we saw here was we could do better in dealing with low performers, accountability, leadership, encouragement, visibility, and support, and education, training, and skill development. We also looked at barriers and challenges. We looked for areas of alignment, and we asked about readiness for change as we sort of stepped into this work. So after looking at several different models, we landed on Huron, previously known, many people know this work as Studer, the Studer Group. And what you see here on the right-hand side is the framework that they use. So this is the 9 principles for organizational excellence. And it really is the guiding principle for aligning the work that we do. On the left-hand side, you can see our strategic plan. Those are the pillars that we have in this year's strategic plan and our big goals. And if we think about those and we think about this framework, they really did lend each other support nicely. So we thought that this was the right tool and the right organization. And after a couple of calls with a couple of different people, we found the right coach too. So we have a coach for this work, and every week we talk with our coach about what we're doing and where we're headed. So what we've been up to so far, we started with just personally. Focusing on personal recovery, understanding that it takes as long as it takes to kind of get past the COVID world that we've lived in for the last couple of years. So we offered tools and resources for resiliency, and recognized it wasn't going to be a 30-day journey. For some people, it was going to be a lot longer. For some people, maybe it was a week off on a beach somewhere taking some well-deserved downtime, and that's great too. We didn't pay for those downtime beach trips, but we did give tools for people to work on while they were having that downtime. We focused on reconnecting to our why, learning a new language. So Huron, like any other sort of framework, has its own language. So we started learning that language. And then our education team and our human resources team paired up and started working on a leader onboarding curriculum, which was pretty cool. We also focused on the team. So once you sort of focus on getting yourself refilled, then you work on your team. So we looked at restoring teams and whether that meant restoring open jobs that hadn't been filled yet, or whether it was looking for innovative solutions. Maybe it was looking at technology to help the team do the work more efficiently. We looked at spending our time as efficiently as we could. So we're still working on meeting management. We're making some progress, but there's still a lot of work to go there. And then we put together cohorts to do a book club. So that was really where the work started, was by reading a book. And that seemed like a silly place to start a book club. How's that going to help shape your culture? But really, it was more about relationships. It was about connecting, and it was about the conversation. So we would each have a chapter or two chapters out of the book. And then we would go through the guided questions that Huron provided, and our cohorts would come together and talk through those questions. So really, it was just creating some time and space for our leaders to connect. And then kind of taking that theme of connections even further, we really focused on creating smaller groups to help foster those connections. And we tried to make them groups that don't always work together. So sometimes it's really easy. Most of us really love the team that we're part of. And, you know, we may or may not love teams that we work with across the organization. And what we really wanted to do was help each other learn about our worlds. We wanted to help build relationships. And we wanted to begin to create conversations so that when it comes to assuming good intentions, you would have sort of a relationship to start from. We developed leader online discussion boards. So Mitzi Hazard is amazing at starting discussions. And we use a tool called Yammer, which is sort of like a business Facebook kind of a concept. And then we started working on standards of behavior, which we'll talk about in a minute, and doing more socially. So we had different leaders step in and coordinate and plan social events so that we could connect outside of work. So working on this theme of our own personal toolkits, we had several new tools introduced to us. What you're looking at here is the Leadership Development Manager tool through Huron. This is my homepage, and this is brand new to our leaders. So we just introduced this one last week. Essentially, what we do is we go into this site, and there is a leadership skills assessment that we each take. You take the assessment, it doesn't go anywhere, it doesn't go outside, but what the system does is it takes that assessment and it says, okay, Brandy, here are the things that you could do better at. And then it assigns modules. So you can see here that I started last week, I finished my assessment and I completed two courses. So this is a really great tool that just allows us to work on those areas of opportunity that we may have for ourselves. There's also a learning lab, which is through Huron, and it's a totally different site, but it's got tools and resources and focus areas and best practices that all of our leaders have access to. We have a leader SharePoint page, so all of the work that we do through the month gets put onto that page, and any resources that we talk about or introduce also gets shared there. We have our Yammer site, and then we have a book club. So Mike talked to you already about our first official Leadership Development Institute. Part of this work is creating the time and space to come together and do things differently, do things better, talk through opportunities for improvement, and share tools. So you see there our coach, Nancy Arata. She's amazing. She's a nurse by background. So, of course, Tina and I loved her immediately. But the rest of the team really has come to love her, too. And she has been working with us. She works with us every week. We have a call. She holds us accountable. We set goals. She measures our progress towards those goals and keeps us moving along. So Nancy has been great in partnering with us on this work. One of the areas that we focused on in our first LDI was this concept of standards of behavior. So really, standards of behavior are an important part of building a healthy organizational culture. And the research shows that when you have standards of behavior, when you have values and behaviors that align, then you're going to see better relationships overall across the workplace. You're also going to see better outcomes and better patient satisfaction, patient engagement. So this is really a great place to start. And this was actually, a couple months long endeavor to go across the organization and ask our staff, ask our leaders, ask our physicians and our APPs, what did they think made a great culture? What makes a great culture? What kind of behaviors do you want to see in a culture that you are proud to be part of? And so what you see here is the document that we came up with. And this was based on several weeks of feedback. We sent out surveys. We did a traveling mojo roadshow. And if you say that 10 times fast, then I will buy you a coffee. We brought snacks, we put up post-it notes, we collected feedback in every way we could think of just to make sure that we had the big buckets identified. And then at our LDI, we worked on really paring those down. So we started with big lists, we looked for themes and common areas, and then we whittled it down. So now we are focused on talking through how do you roll this out? How do you communicate it? And how do you coach to it? So that's what we spent some time on this month, actually. Let me pause there, because this is a lot of words on a slide, and we can get you a copy of it if you'd like. Do you have any questions about any of these?
I'd love to have a copy.
We can do that for you.
Thanks.
All right. And here's what a month in the life of one of our leaders looks like as it relates to the Huron work. So the work isn't really for the faint of heart. And my hat goes off to all of our leaders who are making time, finding time when there is no time to engage in this work. It really has been phenomenal to see the engagement, to see people showing up every month for the conversation and really being part of it. So it's just been really, really neat to be a part of. What you see here every Monday, we spend 2 hours, the planning team spends 2 hours on either planning the next LDI or the next event. And then we also have an hour-long coach call. So we'll visit with Nancy, we'll look at our goals, we'll look at our progress towards our goals, and we'll talk about the sort of the speed at which we're rolling out new things and kind of try to talk through the best strategy for moving forward. And then on the first Thursday of the month, we have our book club. So our cohorts get together and work through their book club chapter. On the second Wednesday of every month, we do a lunch and learn. It's a leader tool series where we introduce usually one tool for our leaders and focus on just standardizing the way that we use those tools across the organization. Once a month, we have a quick coaching session with our book club facilitator. So the way that this works is our book clubs are facilitated by our leaders. And after each session, the leader who just facilitated that chapter then nominates the next facilitator. So we have just a quick little huddle in the middle of the month to talk through tips for engaging everyone in your cohort and kind of what you've seen that works and just offer some ideas for how to kind of manage the next session. And then the following week, we generally have a leader meeting. And that's anywhere from an hour to sometimes an hour and a half. And that really is where we revisit the tools that we introduced. We go through administrative announcements and celebrations. We highlight best practices. And we try to bring our leaders together to collaborate. Every Friday, we have a 4-hour block of time on our calendar. And that time is intended to do your rounding, connect with your team, write thank you notes, do the skills assessment or complete a module, whatever it is, but focus that time to the Huron work. Some of our leaders said, you know, Fridays don't work for me. That's not a great day. And that's okay too. So we encourage them just to whatever day worked the best, move that 4-hour time frame to that other day. And then once a month, we have a small planning team look at the Huron framework. So look at the coaching plan, look at what we have sort of in front of us and try to carve out the curriculum and the agendas for the next couple of months. And so you can see at the bottom, the book club is really all about connecting. Our lunch and learn leader tool series is about learning. And then our leader meetings are about engaging. Any questions about that? All right. So next steps, we are going to continue to just do the work that we've been doing. This work, it takes a while and we're committed to it. And it's really fun to start to see people talking to each other differently, engaging with each other. We have a 5-10 rule that we've implemented. So within 10 feet, you make eye contact. Within 5 feet, you say something to the person in front of you. So I'm just trying to create different standards for how we communicate with each other. You can see our focus areas listed below. Mike came up with these concepts of recover, restore, refocus, and regain, and that's just kind of what we've revisited every month. We have a provider leadership engagement in the fall. So our CMOs actually also have access to the page where you saw the skills assessment piece. And there is curriculum designed specifically for our physician leaders. So we'll be engaging in rolling that out to our physician leaders here in the fall. And then in terms of measurement, we will be taking a culture of safety survey. It's not exactly the same as the Aura that you saw, but it does touch on teamwork and communication and some of those big dot metrics. So that will be coming in the fourth quarter. And if I were you, I would be asking, well, what is the role of a board member? Really, in the documentation that Huron has, it's six big things. So one is ask questions, and this is sort of every meeting. You know, did we focus on the right issues? Did you get the right information? Did the education sessions really develop the knowledge capital that you as board members need to have? Be committed and engaged, participate in a meaningful way, build relationships, understand the nature of the barriers to success from the CEO's perspective, focus on mission, vision, and values, and approve the strategic plan. So the really cool thing is you're already doing all of these things, these are kind of the best practice, the top six. And then just a final thanks to our planning team. Like I said, every leader at Jefferson Healthcare has spent a lot of time, energy, and hours on this work. This planning team, though, spends, like I said, a couple hours every Monday and sometimes more hours in between planning all of these events, trying to make them meaningful, fun, and engaging and relevant. So with that, what questions do you have?
Questions from the board? Well, how is it working, Randy?
I was telling Dunya earlier today, I said, you know, it's funny because normally I would say, here's how it's working. Here's the data that tells us that it's been amazingly effective. And I don't actually have that yet. Anecdotally, I feel like things are changing. It feels like people are having different conversations. It feels like leaders are actively engaging in what I'll call healthy conflict. If there's something that people have a question about, instead of waiting for the meeting after the meeting, people, at least in the meetings I've been at, are respectfully sort of raising their hands and saying, well, did we think about this? Or can you tell me more about that? That doesn't make sense. Rather than kind of retreating and creating sort of the scenario in their heads, there are more conversations that are happening in that way, which was what we had hoped for. In terms of actual data, we'll have that for you in a couple of months, but I don't know if Mike, I saw his camera come on, so I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Oh, Bruce has a question.
So, yeah, so what would your Huron coaches say about how you're doing?
Well, actually, I just had a meeting with her this week, and she said we were doing great. It sounds weird for me to say that because it sounds like I'm celebrating us as a team, but I kind of am. We are where we had hoped we would be in our 90-day goal setting session with her. We've moved things around as sort of things shift and change, and our focus has changed. But in terms of the work that's happened, she has noted that she's been really impressed with our entire leadership team, that our first LDI, she said, she would rank in the top five of LDIs that she had ever been to. So that was a great compliment. So in the words of our coach, you guys are doing a great job.
Yeah, it sounds like good feedback.
I think we leaned into this work, I think, for a couple of reasons. One, we felt we had to do some work on elevating the work environment at Jefferson Healthcare for reasons outside of COVID, and that was due to lots of things. One being, we're just a different organization today than we were 7 years ago. So there was that. And then we try not to use COVID as an excuse, because you could use it a lot. But there is no question that everybody who wears a Jefferson Healthcare badge feels like they've been put through the ringer the last 2.5-3 years. So that's a very real thing. And when we were debating stepping into this work, we were thinking, well, maybe we should give staff some time to restore, right? Recover, breathe, and let this regain our breath and our legs after getting through this. But on the other hand, there's never a better time than to lean into this and use it to accelerate that, you know, that understanding and healing and growth. Because to a lot of us, you know, you're carrying all of these emotions. And what I think this work does is it forces you to sort of unpack those. You know, if you're a little angry about what you've been through the last 18 months, well, that just means you are wide awake and cognizant of your external environment. I mean, this has been something I don't think anyone really would have signed up for. But then the next level of that is, well, what parts of that can you control and what parts of it can't you control, and organizationally and individually? And we are really focused on what we can control as an organization to improve the work environment. And we are really challenging our leaders and all of our employees to embrace and improve what they can control individually. But it's great work. It's inspiring work. It's two steps forward, one step back. When we are trying to encourage and promote this culture of health conflict, conflict is conflict when you step into it. You know, at the end of it, it's healthy conflict if you manage it well. But I think that we are learning that as an organization. I think people are feeling more safe in having those discussions, and we are making progress. I mean, I don't think you ever reached finish line on this. But if you are, if you continue to reach for it, you're probably going to get better. So we're just kind of humbly moving along and trying to make for a better work environment, which we think will translate to a better care environment.
Sounds certainly worthwhile. And, you know, you can't, two steps forward and one step back, you're still moving forward. So, you know, it's going in the right direction, and it's hard to measure those things. And I think a lot of times we think that if we have to change direction, it looks like maybe a failure on one side. That's not true. It's just knowing that you need to go down a different path, and it's just as important knowing what doesn't work as what does work.
Yeah.
Other questions or comments? Awesome job, Randy. Thank you. And Mike, of course.
Yeah, I would just like to say kudos to everybody who's participating in this, because it's very time consuming, and not only the meetings, but also the work that's done outside of this and all the thought and effort that goes into it. So along with Jill, I think you're all doing a tremendous job, both in the workday and this type of work as well. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think Randy and Allison and a few others, I'm not sure they were fully aware that they were signing up for another part-time side hustle when they said, yeah, this Huron looks great. Let's run with it. But they have been great in getting us to the start line and beginning the race.
All right. Any other questions, comments? We're way ahead of schedule. So unless anybody has anything to add about anything, we can take a break and return at 3:30, our posted agenda business meeting time. All right. We will adjourn right now and come back at 3:30. Thank you. Thank you. And welcome back to the business portion of the Jefferson County Public Hospital District No. 2 Board of Commissioners meeting on Wednesday, August 24th, 2022. So we began with a special version of our patient story, one which features a colleague and fellow board member. And Mike, will you please do the introduction for us since Tina is not here?
You bet. Well, as we spent the last month talking about the hospitals in the beginning stages of planning for a campus, a replacement and expansion project. And while there are many important pieces to that project, perhaps the most exciting piece is introducing radiation oncology to our cancer program. So that is a big stretch for a critical access hospital. We will be the first critical access hospital in the state to provide that service. And financially, it's a big stretch. So as you know, we have made application through the Senate appropriation process through Senator Cantwell's office for a $2.5 million appropriation. And we also will be going, engaging our foundation to fundraise for the remainder of the cost of that portion of the project. So in order to do that, we needed to create some resources to help, I think, identify and explain the need. And earlier in the year, we put together a video, which I think does a great job of doing that. So with that, I will ask Alyssa to turn it on.
My wife was amazing. Well, we got married when she was 19 and I was 20. And she always said that we grew up together. Well, we did. 2011, she was diagnosed with T-cell lymphoma. The thing that we still don't have is radiation locally here at Jefferson Healthcare. Terry probably had over 200 radiation treatments, and you have to travel either to Squim or to Paulsbo. A lot of ours were at Seattle, and that's an all-day thing for like a 5 to 15 minute treatment. Often, we talked about what other people do that don't have somebody to help them, like I helped her. After she passed away in 2016, I volunteered with oncology and I helped them put together a handbook for cancer patients and their families, started a foundation in Terry's name, Terry McComas Memorial Fund. Then an opening came up for a hospital commission, so I thought, here's another opportunity to do even more. If I can do anything to help, I will. Jefferson Healthcare probably has over 200 patients that have to go out of the county to get radiation treatments. Having gone through 6 years of this with Terry, I know what those patients are going through. You don't want to have to go to spend the day in the car going somewhere. You're already feeling awful. People want quality, affordable health care close to home. I'd love to see us have linear accelerator here and be able to provide radiation treatments. It means a lot of people won't have to go through what Terry went through.
I moved here.
It's a very moving video. Bruce, thank you.
More power to you, Bruce. That was absolutely excellent. I know I cannot imagine what Terry had to go through. And if somebody is doing chemotherapy as well as radiation therapy and having to travel out of town 5 times a week plus do the chemo, as Terry did, I can only imagine how much better it would be to have the Illinois Accelerator here and do radiation oncology here so they don't have to travel. And thank you so much for doing that video. It just is so helpful for this project. Thank you.
And another thing people may not realize is that Bruce spent many hours volunteering to be on our patient, on our family council to help the hospital from a patient's point of view. So thank you so much. And again, you're volunteering your time as a commissioner. So thank you.
I think we have one more.
I'm just one of many people that have had to go through that. And just hope others don't.
Yeah, thank
you. All going to be working towards that goal, Bruce, right behind you there. So thanks. And then we will move on to public comment.
Jill, we have one quick video we were going to show also that's related, and it's overarching of the project. It's only a minute and 40 seconds.
Perfect. Thank you.
Jefferson Healthcare is the only health system in East Jefferson County. 1/3 and projected to be upwards of 40% of the community is over 65.
So we have a larger proportion of patients with a cancer diagnosis here.
We provide excellent diagnostics, imaging, therapy, surgery, and chemotherapy, but the missing piece is radiation therapy.
When I present a treatment plan to a patient to drive to the radiation site, they're crestfallen. Currently, it's a drive of about an hour one way, Monday through Friday, anywhere from 2 weeks up to 6 weeks.
Somewhere around 200, 250 of our patients need radiation therapy, and it's something we don't provide. Don't provide.
I don't know it's buffering. I don't know what to do.
Well, I think you want to try it once more or might go. We have a little time.
Well, it sounds like it appears that there's some sort of technical difficulty. So I think we can move on. That one is more educational, Jill, and we'll get it in front of the board as the campaign intensifies.
But what we saw, Mike, was actually excellent, very well presented, and I think it's what I saw was send the message well. I think to understand the situation that many of our patients are in is so important for the support of this project.
Absolutely, and nobody can tell it like the patients can.
Yeah,
and their families, and so it is important. Thank you.
It looks like Dunia shared the link in the chat if you guys would like to watch later.
Thank you.
Oh, okay, great. Yes.
Good. Thank you.
A total of 5 videos are all available here at this link, including an overview. So we can make sure that link is in the minutes so that people who want to read, want to look at it at their leisure can look at it. It would be great. And then we will move on to public comment. We now invite public comment from our audience. If you would, this is in-person spoken comment. So if you would rather write your comments, please direct emails to commissioners@jeffersonhealthcare.org or address mail to commissioners at 834 Sheridan Street, Port Townsend, 98368. Have we received any emails or mail comments?
No.
Okay. So in-person speakers, there is a 3-minute time limit and a 1-minute warning before your time is up. And in adherence to our policy, the board will listen to your comments without responding. If you have a question, please put it in writing and submit it so that we can give it our full attention and reply accordingly. Thank you. So anyone who wishes to speak, now's the time. Please hold up your hand or can virtual hand if you need. If you have it. You see the audience, Alyssa, because we can't see it on here.
Yes, I can see, and no one has their hands up.
Okay, thank you. All right, then if no one would like to speak, we will move on. And I'm going to ask for a motion to approve the July 20th special session and July 27th regular session minutes.
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that they be approved as written. Is there discussion? All right. Everyone in favor of approval, raise your hand, please. Okay, unanimous. Then required approvals. Is there anything a commissioner would like to separate from the required approvals? Then may I have a motion to approve, please?
So moved.
Second. Come on, Bruce.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion? All in favor, raise your hand. Okay, thank you. So now we welcome back Brandy Manuel, our Chief Patient and Safety Officer, with her quality report. Hi, Brandy.
Hi. Thank you for having me back. And thank you, Commissioner McComas, for the patient story this month. I think that you said better than any of us could why we do what we do and what a privilege it is to be part of this. So thank you. All right. So again, we're focusing on the quality pillar of our strategic plan. Here are the 4 overarching goals under our quality pillar. We aim to deliver the care guided by the best evidence. We aim to design and implement the most effective performance improvement system, avoid medical errors, provide the safest care possible, and continue our transition to value-based care. So things are looking generally good. What we have here is data that goes through Q2. And actually here. Can you hear me better now? Okay, sorry about that. So this is our quality data aiming to deliver evidence-based care through the end of Q2. We are still in the Q3, so as soon as we have that available, we will report on Q3. Overall, things are looking good. Under our inpatient core measures, we are doing well in our prenatal care and our stroke care. In the outpatient, again, still seeing some opportunity for improvement around our emergency department throughput. In particular, the one that is a bit of a standout is our median time to transfer for median time to discharge for transferred patients. So we're seeing the same thing across most hospitals across the state. So that's why we're sort of a yellowish, orangish color instead of a red, because everyone else's times have gone up just as ours have. Under stroke, this is time to CT. So it's red and it looks bad. I want to give a little context behind this. So under this particular measure, this is an outpatient measure. And so what it means is we're looking only at patients who are not admitted to the hospital or transferred to a higher level of care. So these are patients who came in with a stroke and whose scan happened within 45 minutes. And the number reflects this is we had a total of 3 patients, and we made 1 out of 3. The rest were fairly close to that 45-minute time frame. But what we're suspecting and what we're seeing is that often when we've missed it, there's an arrival time or an arrival mechanism that leads us perhaps down a different path. So we're doing another study right now to see how did these patients arrive, and what our hypothesis is that many of these patients arrive by personal vehicle, not by EMS, and with vague or unclear symptoms. And so it isn't initially clear to that physician or that care team that a CT is warranted. So we're doing some additional analysis to really better understand that one. We also saw a little bit of an uptick in our stroke time to CT when COVID, we were right in the middle of COVID, and there was the need to hurry and go do a terminal clean on the CT if you had a suspected COVID patient in the room. So that definitely put a bit of a delay. So there are a couple factors going on there, but again, small numbers and a couple fallouts and need to do a deeper dive. And then
question about that?
Yeah.
You said that's time to CT for strokes that aren't transferred or admitted?
Correct. So it could be...
Basically, those are basically people on comfort care or... with a complete stroke. So yep. I don't understand why we care when the CT was done. You're not doing anything.
Comfort care is actually excluded from these patients. And we could, if you'd like, Dr. Smith, we can maybe connect and go through the data.
It's fine. I'm just not sure why we're worried about CT to stroke time if we're not really doing anything either. If we're just sending them. I don't know. Okay, never mind.
All right. And then finally, appropriate follow-up for normal colonoscopy. So these are patients who had a colonoscopy for which follow-up was recommended within a 10-year time frame. And so we continued to do well 100% for the last couple years and holding. And then our highlight this month is focused on our orthopedic quality work. So early this year, sort of end of last year, we resumed our orthopedic quality committee, which had been on sort of a break for a while. And the goal of that team was really to pursue accreditation for our hip and knee certification. And that team has been led by Dr. Eisman and Laura Showers, and then Mitzi, Kirsten, Jesse Taft, Donica. I'm forgetting a few, I am sure, but a really awesome team has come together to take a look at our orthopedic quality program and identify opportunities for improvement, work together. We have a couple of different projects that we're working on right now. One of them is creating a nutrition optimization workflow. So Jesse Taft, I believe, is the genius behind sort of putting together this plan. And the goal of this is to really work on optimizing the patient's nutrition, because patients who are malnourished tend to have complications. They tend to have higher infections. They're readmitted. So by optimizing their nutrition, you stand a better chance of just a better recovery overall. So that team is working on that. And then the other piece is working on the overall education, so preoperative education for our patients. So a couple of really good improvement projects. And then also some really good outcomes. So what you see here, just again, another note of thanks and appreciation for our amazing data team. Sidoni and the team created this dashboard, which looks at lots of different measures. But as it relates to our hip and knee surgeries, you can see from January to the end of June, some of our outcomes measures. So things that we look at are discharge disposition. Most of our patients are going home, which is great. We look at length of stay. We look at inpatient readmission rates. We look at sepsis, pneumonia, complications. And you can see overall things are going well here. So this is one of our newer visualizations, and it's beautiful. We used to pull this data from lots of different sources, and so the team has done a great job in putting this together so we can look at it on a regular basis. Any cases that have a fallout, Dr. Eisman and the team will review and identify whether there were any opportunities for improvement or missed elements that we should have caught. And then transitioning to our, yep, Commissioner Dressler, you're muted. Oh, Commissioner Dressler, I think you're muted.
I'm indeed. If you could go back one slide and look at the nutrition aspect of the preoperative nutrition. So what sort of, are you working on a plan, or are we looking at maybe our dietary system putting probably frozen meals together for those elderly patients who maybe live alone and don't have the wherewithal to get it back very well? And
so the pieces that we're that the team is looking at now are really optimizing the nutrition by engaging the dietitian, and then also by including the patient, by doing just more comprehensive pre-op education about nutrition. We also have dietary supplements for patients who may be malnourished that they can get here. And then also looking at the requirements for patients to have nothing by mouth preoperatively. There's some guidance that that suggests that that can be a little bit shorter of a time frame. Mm-hmm. So working with our anesthesia team and our surgeons to see if our patients could be candidates for that. So I think it's early in the planning, and right now they're collaborating with our surgical team, but those are kind of the focus areas.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions? All right. And then shifting gears to our service, this is our inpatient overall rating. So looking at all of our inpatient departments for the hospital, you can see that we ticked down a little bit in the first and second quarters, and we'll continue to kind of keep an eye on that. You can see over to the right the breakdown of that. So overall, our patients in the ACU scored the highest, and in fact, higher than the benchmark. And then those in ICU and family birth center were the lowest. The family birth center is a fairly low end, so it definitely can look skewed. But that number for two quarters worth of data is actually, no, three quarters is 11. So a very small end for that one. And then shifting gears to our ambulatory and outpatient service data, you can see here the information right out of our real-time system. And overall, things are looking good. We are performing well in oncology, in our clinics, our specialty and primary care clinics, and outpatient testing. And we have some opportunity to improve in the emergency departments. The best scores, or the comments that reflected to sort of those top box scores, were that our patients felt like they got instructions for how to prepare. They were told when to expect their results, generally really commented on the facility being clean, and general recognition. So there are a lot of opportunities to recognize and appreciate our staff and our physicians from the comments that we received. And then the lowest scores were getting help as soon as they wanted, spent enough time with the patient, and being informed of delays and wait times. So wait times and access continue to be a bit of an opportunity.
So if I can also ask a question about, was there a theme running through the Family Birth Center, or that it wasn't as it's mainly one-to-one care?
So unlike here, where it talks about instructions to prepare, some of the opportunities in the Family Birth Center were patients didn't feel like they got enough information. They didn't feel like we prepared them for how to manage pain through labor, and just opportunities for better communication and teamwork across.
Yeah, that's disappointing. Thank you.
Yeah. And then I always like to wrap up by sharing some feedback right from our patients. So a lot of comments, you know, ICU had a little bit lower score as well. And when we think about the patients who are in ICU, they tend to be sicker or require a higher level of monitoring. And the comments kind of reflected that. So you didn't get great sleep. It was kind of noisy. People were in and out. It felt confusing. And so I think that's something to consider. But then overall, some really great comments about our physicians across the organization. The medical group, we had some comments about wait times and just times to get an appointment. But overall, feeling fortunate to have Jefferson Healthcare in the community and very complimentary. Any questions? Anything you want me to go back to?
Questions from the commissioners?
I don't have another one. Thank you.
Thank you, Brandy. Very good. And it's always so gratifying to hear from the patients. I hear that all the time out, you know, when I'm out and about, how wonderful they think our hospital is, and get kudos all the time. So thank you, everybody.
But actually, Brandy, just to go back to the OB, I wonder if not having enough information about pain during labor, that might be something for the clinics as opposed to the obstetric department, but it comes out at the birth center. Yeah, that was disappointing for me as a former OB nurse here.
And just, I should have added, OB committee met actually just this week and talked about some improvement plans and improved coordination and just some things that could be done a little differently. So now with the OB quality committee working closely with our OB section and our OB chief, I think that we have some real opportunities to make a big difference in those numbers.
Yeah, I hope so. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Brandy, for job well done.
Well, and I will also just point out that small organizations are have to contend with the curse of small ends, and I think that while over the course of 6, 9, 12 months, you really do get a sense for trending of data, and certainly every feedback and input counts. But I also need, I have learned over the years to try to make sure I followed the trends, and certainly every feedback and every input is directional and can be a nugget. It doesn't at all times speak to a systemic issue. I find myself saying that a lot from time to time to better understand and put in data in context.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Then in that case, we will go ahead and go to Tyler Freeman, our CFO, and the July 2022 finance report. Welcome, Tyler. Hope you had a great vacation.
Thanks. I did. It was nice. But right back into it. So, and with that, let's jump ahead to the stats page. So the stats for July, as you can see, there's quite a bit of red on the stats page, but the income statement isn't as bad as you would kind of expect as you go through and look at those numbers. And a part of the reason for that is some of our larger revenue producing departments still had a good month. So pharmacy was at 114% of their revenue, even though when you look at the meds dispense number, it was lower than budget for the month of July. Emergency department, 107% of revenue. Lab, 101, even though their billable tests were under their budget as well. So there's some of those where the lab and pharmacy specifically where it's a little tricky when you look at just the statistic and not the revenue side, because there can be quite a variation between the tests and the drug. So Both of those departments still did well, and along with some of our other top departments, which is why it's not as dire as it would seem when you look at this. One of the other things that I did want to call attention to is the other thing that you may notice if you look at the detailed stats pages, you know, Express Clinic is 40% above budget, and the emergency department was 24% above budget. And both of those numbers are quite high, and they are very busy in both of those departments. I did also want to point out, though, that in 2020, we saw a lot of depression in terms of the amount of visits to both of those departments. And so their budget is quite a bit lower. It's still the budget that we have for 2022 is about 8%, 8.5% lower than our 2019 run rate. So when you look at those numbers and you see, you know, 1,200 visits for the emergency department, they did have 1,100 in 2019, and there were 900 Express Clinic visits in 2019 as well in July. So we're kind of just seeing what we were expecting was that that trend to continue and those departments to still not see the volumes that they did historically. And we're seeing a bounce back in those departments, which is nice and good for our revenue, as well as the emergency department is one of the larger revenue producing departments that we have. And if I go ahead to the next slide. So as I mentioned, with those larger departments doing well, even though our stats are low and not all clinics are kind of back up to the volume expectations that they had at the beginning of the year, we still ended the month with gross patient service revenue 4% below budget, and we're 3% for the year under budget. We are $9 million over our 2021 run rate. So we do have increases. It's just not increases that hit our expectations quite yet. And so total operating revenue, pretty much right at budget for the month, pretty much right at budget year to date. Salaries and wages, when you looked at the stats page, you saw our FTEs were still under budget, and that's causing that favorable variance in salaries and wages. But if you see the detail page for the income statement, a lot of that is just being shifted to professional fees. So we had a $797,000 favorable variance for salaries and wages, but we are over budget for professional fees, which is where our travelers and other contract labor is going to be coded, and we're over by $623,000. So it's pretty much a one-for-one shift between the two of them. Overall, though, for a month where gross patient service revenue is 4% below budget, to be at a net income over our expectation and 20% over for the year is good. I do also want to remind you of we are still recognizing the 2021 deferred provider relief funds, and so those total to about $1.7 million so far recognized this year. And without those, our change in net position for the year would move from that 28% above budget to 48% below budget. And our margin would be at 1.4%. So we're definitely feeling that increase in expense without quite seeing our volumes that a lot of other facilities are seeing as well. And then next slide. Cash and accounts receivable, those have pretty much held flat. You can see that green line there is our expectation with the Medicare cost report at the end of the year. Right now, we're expecting them to pay about $1.4 million because our cost structure has increased. We're running at about an average daily expense of $400,000 so far in 2022. And that's quite a bit higher than where we were at last year. So then you'll also note that the yellow top line there, our Medicare Advanced payback was effectively gone. We had $20,000 that we still owed them at the end of July. So that has all been paid up. The full 18 and some change million that we received from Medicare for that advance payment has all been paid back at this point. Next slide. And board financial report, not too much to note here, pretty close to where we were at for budget in the year. And we'll see some of those, one-time expenses like the audit and others. You'll continue to see that budget grow, even though the year-to-date actuals will stay the same because you've already paid for it. So, and last slide. So as of this morning, August is projected to end at 97.1% of our budget, and cash collections are a little bit under our goal at 364 versus the 390 that we have for our goal, and days in AR pretty close to where we've seen them lately, around the 42-43 range. Any questions?
I'd just like to comment, there was an article in the Seattle Times regarding charity care and the new laws, I guess, that came into being. And I understand that we already were doing 400% of poverty, so we were already ahead of the game. I don't know if I misunderstood it, but I got the impression that they were expecting small rural hospitals not to be so charitable. And I want to be reassured that we are at the same level of these level one hospitals that allegedly do the better charity.
Yeah, we our charity care policy was so generous that we did not have to make any changes as a result of that bill. And we are still more generous than what is required of us. We're slightly under the tier one. We would need to, I believe, I'll have to get back to you on where we are exactly. I don't want to misquote where we're at, but we're very close to the tier one to the point where we did the analysis and didn't think it was going to substantially impact us. But it is true that most rural facilities will be significantly impacted by that. And a part of it is just the fact of, cost of living, wages in most rural areas is very low, and 400% of the poverty line in some rural communities could be a significant portion of the population. Almost everyone could qualify under those parameters, depending on where you're looking at. So,
I felt slightly offended as a, a member of this board that think that we were being we were not as given the kudos, if you like, for being pretty much level one. In fact, I had a member of the community say something to me about it, and I assured him that, in fact, we were probably one of the most generous charity care programs in the state. And I think that's still true.
I imagine we may be the only critical access hospital that didn't have to change their policy.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think it's the two tiers was a function of two things. One, I think that if you recognize that what distinguishes a tier one from a tier two, it's mostly being part of a system, and systems are mostly in urban and suburban communities. But I think that when the Attorney General's office set out to solve this problem, rightly or wrongly, they thought that more of it sat in the urban and suburban hospitals and rural hospitals. But secondly, and I want to reemphasize Tyler's point that the 400% federal poverty level, that's just a number. But that because cost of living is less and lower in rural communities, the job distribution is typically lesser and lower. In some rural communities, 3/4 of all residents would qualify for the charity care program. And I mean, just on its face, a program that, that pretty much captures half of the state's population and ultimately provides health care for no cost. I mean, there's no question about the good this bill does, but it also should raise some concern, because health care is expensive and fewer people now will be actually paying for it. It's like most things in life, that there's, you know, that there's good and there's concern about change. But I think I think this bill does more good than create concern, but it will call for a fewer cohort of our population paying for the care for all. And I hope that the legislature, while they were keenly focused on what will be a revenue deduction for a lot of hospitals, will be as keenly focused on revenue enhancement going forward. Because at the end of the day, healthcare costs what healthcare costs. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, I don't care how many people pay for it, as long as there's adequate reimbursement. And it would stand to reason that the more people that are paying, the less per person that would be. There's a lot of people are concerned about this, but mm-hmm. ultimately it's going to rid. It will do a good job, I think, of stopping some of the really burdensome collection practices that were going on with respect to healthcare, and that's a good thing.
Thank you.
I guess one extra point on that too is that Medicare is the only payer that reimburses us for charity care. So if you remember when we went over the Medicare bad debt rules and how we were complying with that policy, charity care does qualify as a Medicare bad debt. So we do receive some reimbursement from CMS for the charity care that we offer traditional Medicare beneficiaries. But Medicaid, uninsured, commercially insured, if they qualify for charity care and we write that off, we do not receive any additional funding for that write-off.
And that could be significant over the years.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions or comments for Tyler? Thank you, Tyler. Thank you for your report.
Thank you.
Now, our CEO, Mike Glenn, has his administrative report. Mike?
Yeah. And you got 4 doses of me last month. So speaking of charitable activity, my report is fairly short and concise this month. It will start off with an advocacy report, and I'll ask Dunya to go over the work we're doing at the federal and state level.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. So a lot going on right now, both state and federal level. We have a meeting with Representative Therringer scheduled for early September to discuss 2023 legislative session. So Mike and I will be joining him to discuss that, and especially around some appropriations conversations. Also, Representatives Therringer and Chapman will both be here at the hospital in late September to discuss our campus modernization and expansion project. So that'll be great to have them out here to see all the cool things that we are doing. And as part of an output from a day-long retreat that we had with WISHA staff and the rest of LD 24, Legislative District 24, the operations staff from each of the hospitals have agreed to meet monthly during sort of this off-season. We're going to increase it to biweekly as we get closer to the legislative session starting, and then during the legislative session, we'll probably meet weekly for just a short period of time to touch base, make sure that we're all on the same page. And this is just to help us make sure that we are collaborating appropriately, reinforcing each other's messages, and that we sort of know everything that's been going on. So I'm really excited about those meetings. Another thing that is not on this list that we are working on, too, is that some of our staff here are going to start working with UFCW, our union, around some advocacy issues that came up during the difficult to discharge patient period of time. And so we reached out to them to start by asking for some help because of the huge impact that it had on our workforce. And after we got that specific case sort of settled and moved forward, we said, well, why don't we have a broader conversation about difficult to discharge patients and how do we support our workforce and some of the potential overlap in our advocacy agendas. So that meeting is rescheduled for next week, I think, which will be great. And it'll be, I think, the first time that we've ever worked with the union outside of the contract and outside of them supporting our employees. So I'm excited for that conversation to see where it goes, and we'll have more for an update next month.
Yeah, I think it was, we had this real matter of fact discussion with them that that we have so much common ground. We have so much work that we can and should do that's in alignment. But like any relationship, we're not going to agree on all things, and we shouldn't let disagreement in some areas get in the way of working together in areas that we do agree. And this is a great example that we are very interested in providing a safe and stimulating work environment for our bedside caregivers. And when we have some difficult to discharge patients that really should not be in this setting, it behooves both of us to convince Olympia that resources should be available to get those patients to the setting that not only is better for them, but for Jefferson Healthcare. So I'm really pleased that the union agreed to step into this discussion with us.
Thanks. Next slide, please, Alyssa. And we had a visit this morning from Representative Kilmer, and thank you to both Commissioners Dressler and Bueller for attending that with us. We talked about the Jefferson Cancer Treatment Project. We did a tour of the medical oncology clinic, thanks to Corey Quigley and her team for hosting us there. We did a lot of conversation about the overall modernization and expansion plans. We visited dietary, thanks to Chef Stark, the OBGYN clinic. Dr. Skorberg was able to meet with us, which was amazing. And then Jake actually led Representative Kilmer an outside walk of the campus where we looked at the areas that are going to be torn down and talked through the plans there. And thanks to Kelly O'Connell and Aaron Vallett for participating in that. And everyone was really great. We then had a larger meeting in the Dirksen with some of our leaders. We talked about the Critical Access Hospital Modernization Act, comma, and specifically how it related to difficult to discharge patients. We talked about hospital capacity at the state level, and we, of course, offered our support and thanked him for his ongoing support of rural healthcare. It was a really great meeting. He had some time open up on his schedule. It was just a pretty standard district visit that he was doing, and it was great to see him. We got him for an hour, which was awesome. A couple of pictures there on the left. We have a meeting scheduled with Jake Johnson, who's our federal lobbyist and is helping us identify funding mechanisms for the building, and some of the building architects to identify pieces of the overall $75 million project that might have some external funding sources. So there was a big workshop that happened a couple of weeks ago, and we can now have that conversation. So I talked about it last month, and that has actually been scheduled. So it'll be great to get everyone in a room and start talking through how we can support this project with external funding. And we're preparing for Rural Advocacy Days. So September 19th through the 21st, we will be in D.C. with the rest of the rural hospitals. And this is sort of led by WISHA. There is no official agenda yet, but as soon as we get the list of talking points, I will send them out to the board so you have them ahead of time. And I expect that to be coming probably in the next, I would say, 2 to 3 weeks. And like I said, as soon as I get it, I'll send it out to everyone. But it'll be great to go back there and see our legislators and be back on the Hill talking about all these amazing opportunities and programs that we have for rural healthcare and Jefferson Healthcare in particular. Any questions?
So Representative Kilmer is such a great partner. Whenever we meet with him, he asks, how can I help you? What can I do for you? And with respect to the project, there were two specific asks. One, the appropriations request for the linear accelerator made it out of Senator Cantwell's office and will very likely make it out of the Senate. However, it needs to make it out of the House as well. So by asking Representative Kilmer to be on the lookout and to advocate for that, and know that it's necessary, will be very instrumental in delivering that appropriations to Jefferson County. And secondly, he asked how we intended to finance the project, and we said, well, we had reached out and spoke with USDA at the state level, and he said that he has had lots of very good experience with USDA at the federal level, that this is a program and an agency that is specifically directed to help organizations like Jefferson Healthcare and communities like ours and for projects like this one, and that he wanted to be kept in the loop and to help in any way that he can. So we were thrilled to receive those two messages and shared with him kind of the usual suspect laundry list of other things that he can and should be on the lookout. But we are so fortunate to have Representative Kilmer in our community and our side. He is just this terrific congressman and better human being.
We also reached out to both senators, to their staffers here, to see if they were going to be in our area or our district, offered them a similar tour of the campus if they wanted it. The way the Senate does home visits is a little bit different because they oversee the entire state as opposed to representatives from the House side that only have their districts to look at. So that is out there. We will see. They are on recess right now, so they're back home. So it'd be great to get both Senators Cantwell and Murray at our facility more regularly. So we're working on that. Thank you. Mari, did you have a question?
No, I'm just going to say, I think we're very fortunate in having Representative Kilmer, particularly as he was born, I guess, and grew up in Port Angeles. He knows the area well. He knows what it's like in rural communities. And I think he's been doing a sterling job for us.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Dunia. Next slide, please.
Thank you, Dunia.
The budget slides, August is typically a challenging volume month because of appropriate and well-earned and deserved vacations. Some reasons people want to go on vacation in the Northwest in August and not February. And so this is a reflection primarily of providers being out and the continuation of our goal to staff up the rest of the hospital. Next slide. And in particular, in surgery, I think we see this mostly in surgery, and they're probably most impacted. Volumes are most impacted by surgeons being away from the office. That's probably what we're seeing here. And then the cancer volumes are bouncing around a little bit too. Next slide. And these are the emergency and express clinic volumes continue to be on the rise. At the last couple of meetings, we've had great questions about express clinic volumes and are those patients from our community? Do they have primary care doctors? Just sort of unpacking this interest in unpacking what we know and can know about the profile of those patients. So we asked Dunia and her data team to help us better understand who's showing up at the express clinic in the emergency department, and they came up with some really enlightening slides. So I think that's the next slide.
It is.
Alyssa, all right, and I'm going to have Dunia just walk you through these.
So this is for the emergency department. I focused on the ED because those were the questions that came up at the last board meeting. If you would like to see Express, I have the visualization open on my computer, and I'm happy to share that with the group. But this is patient PCP status, and it is emergency department visits by week. If it is dark blue, that means that individual had a Jefferson Healthcare PCP. If it is light blue, that they live in Jefferson County, so they have one of our zip codes but do not have a Jefferson Healthcare PCP. And then the red is they don't live here in Jefferson County. They don't have a Jefferson Healthcare PCP. So one of the things that we had been wondering is how do those numbers sort of toggle out? And the way that I look at this is I look at the percentage in the dark blue. And from the last several weeks, it jumps around a little bit week to week, but typically it's pretty consistent. It's dropped down a little bit the last full week on 8/14. But for the most part, it's in the mid to high 60% are the folks that are coming into our ED have a Jefferson Healthcare PCP here. Next slide, please, Alyssa. The other question that we got was around the county. So who are we seeing in our emergency department? And so again, dark blue is Jefferson, red is other, yellow is Kitsap, and the lighter blue is Clallam there at the bottom. And I know that there is some feelings that we have more patients coming in from Clallam County. And to be quite honest, technically we really do if you look at week 6, 26, and 7, 3, but we also have more Jefferson County patients. So as a percentage of the whole, it hasn't really changed that much. There's some weeks whenever it's a little bit higher at the high 19% from Clallam, but for the most part, it stayed pretty consistent. However, it is feeling busier in the ED because it is. Mike, would you like me to share the Express Clinic visualizations, or are we good with the ED?
I think we're good with the ED, unless any of the board members want to see a similar breakdown with the Express Clinic.
And we are happy to add this to the monthly report from here on out. Marie.
The patients who are from Jefferson County who don't have a PCP, is there any inquiry to those patients as to why they don't? That they have a PCP somewhere else and it's just, but they live here and so they come here for emergency or express care?
So I think that Dr. Smith might still be on the line, but whenever I've been to the emergency department as a patient or with any of my family members, usually if someone doesn't have a PCP at all, we offer them the opportunity for a PCP. And so we have a pretty amazing, and Jake's on the line too, StarDoc process to get people embedded within our primary care clinics. But we did not dig deep enough to look at if these people have no PCP versus they just see a different person or they prefer to go to their PCP is in Poulsbo or anything like that.
Yeah. Jake or Dr. Smith? Usually, most of the time, if they have an out-of-town primary care provider, it will still show up on Epic. So most of those people really don't. Dunya, I would be curious, you know, you're talking about the Clallam County numbers being stable, and they look like they are. You know, April, though, of this year is still after OMC ran into its catastrophe. So I'd be curious if it jumped since, you know, before they hit their troubles. I mean, you know, just idly curious, I suppose, but.
I'm happy to show that we have it listed out by week, by month, and by year, but the visualization is really overwhelming to look at. So sure, I just decided to look at by week, but especially Dr. Smith, I'm happy to send you that information.
Oh yeah. You know, like I said, it's just idle curiosity, honestly. So.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Smith, if I may say something, I've got a friend in Squim, and I believe on the social media Nextdoor platform, your department, emergency department at Jefferson Healthcare, has many more positive remarks by patients who will come here as opposed to going to OMC for whatever reason. Jefferson Healthcare emergency room has many more positive responses and remarks, and they come here instead.
Well, it does feel like the majority of people we get from Clallam are from Squim. Yeah. I mean, we have some that come all the way from Port Angeles, but certainly Squim is more common.
Yeah.
Well, Mari, I can think of one obvious reason why people would prefer Jefferson Healthcare's ED over Olympic Medical Center, and that's Dr. Smith, of course.
Please don't stop.
Well, having been a patient and under Dr. Smith's care, I can endorse that.
Yeah, yes, I do too. I have my own theory. Why there is a percentage of people who don't have primary care doctors. I think there's a percentage of people who just don't think that that's important. That if we have really improved, I think, our our access to primary care and our access to same day care. And when we figured out how to operate the Express Care Clinic same day, non-appointment, but yet bill it as a rural health clinic, that to many people, that's their doctor. Dr. Candice Byers used to say that she has a panel of 1,000 people, but it's not formal. That folks just that's what they rely on. And I think that's just how some people seek their care. So I think that Express, we will never get up to 100%. I think our goal should be 100% of all the patients in this community that want to establish a primary care doctor. And I think we should try to convince them that that's better, more comprehensive care. But there will always be a cohort of folks that just say, I'm good. System works great for me when I need it. And this is how I will choose to seek my care.
Bree, I think you're right on. Mike, I know several people who are in the younger age bracket, you know, in the 30s and 20s, and that's their, they think that, you know, they don't at this point, and if they do need it, they'll just go to the urgent care or, you know, check whatever. So, yep, I think you're right.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Dinya. Next slide, please. I wanted to give you just a quick operations update on a couple discussions that we have going on right now and an exciting announcement about new leaders at Jefferson Healthcare. We have, as you know, that we've got a Dr. Elizabeth McGlynn, a radiation therapist, is at the hospital, I think once a week-ish, to provide rad-on consultation to our patients. So patients that are getting MedOnc at our hospital, and then Dr. Murphy or Norman or Abrams have also prescribed radiation therapy. Dr. McGlynn can meet with them face-to-face, answer their questions, and if appropriate, line them up at the best facility, the Seattle Cancer Care Alliance or St. Michael's or in Seattle somewhere. We have had one discussion and have another scheduled to talk about what an expansion of that relationship would be like. And I think that when we do bring in our own radiation oncology service, there are lots of specialty services that you need to support a linear accelerator. And some of these services, we probably, with one LINAC, probably don't require an FTE that in order to provide that support. So many organizations look to partner with larger organizations for that professional component. And Seattle Cancer Care Alliance, which by they have changed their name to Fred Hutch. So Seattle Cancer Care Alliance is now Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center. And they've been great partners in the past, and we will see if there's a sensibility to expanding that partnership. Secondly, as I think many of you are aware, we've been involved in a lengthy discussion with East Jefferson Fire and Rescue and at the same time Olympic Ambulance to try to find a way to make sure 100% of our interfacility transfers needs is met. Most of the time on the typical day, two or three transfers pretty easily managed, but there are times where we have a need for four, five, and even six transfers, and that has tended to overwhelm past systems. And while you may think, well, four out of five out of six, that's not too bad, well, it's zero for one. So you're missing 100% of the opportunity for that last patient. So we are interested in a system that is wall to wall and more predictable and more reliable. And both organizations have been great partners to work with. And we have appreciated our discussions. And lastly, just wanted to celebrate three internal promotions, very hard-earned, well-deserved, and we could not be happier to appoint Donica to the director of surgery, Corey, the director of oncology, and Kara, director of ACU-ICU. They have been doing this work for several months, maybe even slash years, or year, Put them through a process where their colleagues and their peers thought that they were the best candidates to take this work on full time. So we now are in the process. Tina is designing a sort of an onboarding and a professional development path that our hope is that they will do together. I look forward to them being a really strong nucleus of the next generation of leaders here. I wanted to, one, make you aware of that, and two, just give them a shout out because they're great at what they do and a joy to work with. So congrats. And I think that's, community engagement. So August is fair and grand opening month. So several of you made an appearance at the Jefferson County Fair, and I guess last weekend or weekend before last. So thanks for that. Amy and Tina did a great job setting up our booth, and it was I think we answered a lot of questions. And, you know, most importantly, we were there, which I think is important for those sort of things. We had a presence at the Jamestown Sclalom Healing Center, the medication assistant treatment clinic, which had its grand opening last Saturday. And that was a lovely event. They've already signed up or assessed about 100 patients in their first month, and that work continues. So that's 100 people who now are getting the life transformation care of opioid addiction treatment. That is it's very gratifying to have played our organization just a small role in the development of that, and now we are leaning into the next phase of that campus, which will be a 16-bed emergency treatment center, an inpatient facility for psychiatric patients. So that planning work is set to begin. And just like everything Jamestown Sclalom and Ron Allen in particular, everything that they do, it's a beautiful facility very lovely and serene. It's right behind Costco, so the next time you're in Squim, the western roundabout, just turn south right on that roundabout, and it's just probably a quarter mile up the road. And then lastly, the Jefferson County All-County Picnic was last Saturday, and again, Amy stood the booth up, and we had several representatives from Jefferson Healthcare man the booth. That event isn't quite what it used to be. I think when they nixed Aaron's corn on the cob, that probably had a dampening effect on community participation. But it's still important to do. Our other emergency response partners were there, and I think it's important for us to be there too. So we were there singing the community's praises. So that concludes my report.
Any questions from the board or anybody?
No, just thank you for all the work you're doing, Mike. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Well, yes, and thank you for the great report as usual. It's always informative and welcome. So thank you. Sure. And thank you for Dunia too, and for Dr. Smith for your comments. And congratulations to Donica, Corey, and Cara. That's great. So, yeah. Okay. We don't have medical staff this time. So we will go to board business. And Case isn't here to report on the Board of Health meeting, so we'll get him next time. So we're to scheduling our generative governance meeting that we talked about earlier in the today. So since Case still isn't here, shall we just go ahead and do this at the next meeting. We can talk about rescheduling it at that time instead of trying to do it now.
So are you talking about the 14th meeting that we've canceled?
No, I'm talking about the next board meeting.
Okay.
We can, at that time, in the board discussion, business. Board yeah. business discussion, we can talk about frequency and when to schedule.
Fine.
Thanks. I'm okay with that.
Consensus? Okay. Matt, you okay with that? All right. And Mari, you're okay with that?
That's fine. Thank
okay. you. Okay, good. Is there anything else that anyone would like to discuss under board business? Mm-hmm. Okay, then, meeting evaluation. Mari, you in the upper corner?
Well, another very informative and exciting, I think, in some ways, meeting with the progress that I hope we're about to make. It was certainly it's refreshing to, in some ways, after two plus years of COVID, to hopefully get back to business and move on to provide more more services, improve what needs to be improved, and continue along the way to provide everything that we can for our community. So I think it was a great meeting and very uplifting. And as I say, we haven't shut the door on COVID, but I certainly hope that we've slammed at least its foot in the door.
Bruce, how about you?
Well, I mean, as always, the reports are always good. I mean, and even with Mike and his last thing, it just shows how busy things are this time of year. Everybody wants to have their fairs and other outdoor activities in August, and I'm glad that we were part of it. I wasn't able to be at the picnic, but I know it was well received. I heard about people there. So anyway, the meeting was good.
All right, Matt.
Yeah, good meeting, informative, efficiently run. So.
Okay, great.
That's all.
Okay, and I agree with the three of you. Mike, anything you'd like to say?
Great meeting. I will note that we'll likely be done before 5 o'clock, which is a good thing, I think, particularly in on a day like today. And also, next month is Employee Appreciation Month. I probably should have spoke to that a little bit more, but I'm fixing to send out an email to all staff that has sort of describes the activities, and you know, one includes the barbecue. And a whole bunch of other stuff. We look forward to redoing what I think was pretty well received last year, and basically spreading out the expense of the employee picnic and employee I guess it's just employee picnic over the entire month. It seems to be we're able to touch more people that way. So be on the lookout for that email and schedule events, and there might be a couple of opportunities for you to get involved in.
Thank you. All right, then. I will entertain a motion to conclude the meeting.
So move.
Second?
Second.
Third discussion. All in favor, raise your hand. Okay, meeting is concluded, and thank you again to Alyssa for your work, and we'll miss you.
Okay. That's right. I get the final word on Alyssa leaving. Alyssa has been wonderful to all employees at Jefferson Healthcare. I think she's been great in supporting the board. But she's been a super fantastic EA, and and colleague and even a pal. So we're going to miss the hell out of her, but I'm happy for the opportunity that she's going to. It's neat, and she will wow them at the city, I'm sure. So,
all right.
Get up.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay, thank you. Good night.